The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome to the most listened to show on Tony Curry Radio, TKR, also our most listened to podcast. And we just started about 30 days ago. It's the Kiefer and Curry Show. It is Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry coming together. And we've been talking a lot of sports over the first four shows, Kip. Today we're going to do something a little different. We go back and forth with our subjects. And I wanted to get into International Women's Month. And it just kind of hit me last week. I thought, why don't we do kind of like the Mount Rushmore of women in our lives. And I thought more of women who have influenced my life. Now, we know influencers aren't always a good influence. In my particular case, all four are good. I'm not sure what you got on your list. But this may be one of the most important and influential shows that I think I will have done in my career. And I just want to explain that. I went through a divorce, and I roughly 55, 60% of our listeners have probably gone through the same thing. In my particular case, it was really, really ugly. Didn't want it to go that route. And so my thoughts and views on women are a tad different than they were just 4 or 5 years ago. And so when I had to come up with a list of four, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. One of those women's going to be my mom, and I know it probably is going to be in your case as well. But I actually had a difficult time coming up with the other three. And then I prayed on a little bit, and all of a sudden it just came out of me. But I don't have any honorable mentions, man. I mean, there are four that are really important to me. What about your list?
Well, I mean, I went through sort of the same struggles. Two of mine are obvious to me. The other ones, I kind of labored over the, do I want to recognize women that have had an influence indirectly through my admiration of their accomplishments and their, you know, personas, or do I want to, you know, keep this list all exclusive to people who I've actually been in contact with.
Yes.
So I've got several honorable mentions because I went one route and not the other. So I think it will be interesting because that was a tough call for me, whether to recognize, you know, historical figures, I guess you could call them, that I didn't really interact with directly, or people that were very much involved in my life.
There you go. Well, I'm going to let you start it off with your first lady here as we celebrate International Women's Month here on Kiefer and Curry.
Okay, on the Kip Kiefer Mount Rushmore, you said it. I don't think you could ever do one of these lists unless there were some extraordinarily extenuating circumstances. The person who brings you into the world is pretty damn significant. And I don't think there's an exception to that statement. And in my case, Sarah Alice James Kiefer, who was born in 1936. Tony, people talk about, I guess it's kind of a big joke now, but people talk about walking to school up a mountain in 3 feet of snow and freezing conditions. That's what my mother's life was in her early years. She was a West Virginia Hills girl, born and bred near, get ready for this, Nutter Fort, West Virginia. And they lived on, actually, and I got to visit it a few years ago, they actually lived about a half a mile up a steep slope called Hepsibal Hill in not exactly plush circumstances. She was born right in the Depression era, and they really didn't have much of anything. Her father was kind of a scandalous character, and we're full disclosure here, he became basically the town drunk. So they couldn't really count on him for anything. She was by far the youngest of her siblings. Her older sister was 19 years older than her, so it was quite a spread. But the week after she graduated from high school, unlike everybody else in her family, got out of West Virginia, went to Washington, D.C., where a couple of her aunts were working for the phone company. And yet, yes, the visual of sitting there pulling wires out of a control center and with headsets on. I mean, the old vision of that. That was her original job. But she quickly was discovered, went to work for Coca-Cola, and actually started doing some modeling. She was kind of a va-va-voom for a West Virginia Hills girl. And then she crossed paths with the slick big city guy, Bill Kiefer, who swept her off her feet because she thought he looked like Elvis. And 9.5 months later, 9.5 months later, after they said I do, Kip Kiefer made his debut. So I've looked at the calendar and counted the days. I might get one of those fast babies, which would really have been scandalous in that era. But my mother, after she went through a divorce with my dad in 1970, because he was not the life of the party. He was the party. And they stayed together a long time, had three of us children. I was the oldest. And when that marriage fell apart, I saw her gather herself. She had never really worked since before she was married, got a job with United States Gypsum, a building products company, worked her way up to a management position in just a couple of years, and took care of us very well for the rest of my childhood. Always selfless, always there. I just lost her a couple of weeks ago, so this is particularly profound for me.
Yes, sir.
But Sarah James Kiefer, from the hills of West Virginia, a small hills girl who made it big, is my number one enshrinee.
What a beautiful story. Yeah, and again, these are the four ladies that influenced our lives the most. That's a great story, Kip, and my mom will certainly be on the list. I'll probably do her last. 1976, I was 10 years old. There wasn't a kid out there, and I probably was a little young for that, to own one particular poster that has now sold over 27 million copies. It's the biggest selling poster of all time. And of course, do you know who was on that poster back in 1976?
I would certainly guess Farrah Fawcett.
That was Farrah Fawcett. And I was 10 years of age, of course, when Cannonball Run came out in 1981, which I still think is one of the greatest movies of all time, just from all the cameos in that particular flick. I was 15 years old. Farrah Fawcett woke up my sexuality as a teenager. And I think she did that for a lot of individuals. And, you know, when I was going through this, I didn't want people to think, oh, come on, Farrah Fawcett. She really was that influential in my life at that point in time. I remember having, they had the big posters, right? But if for some reason, say you were a Baptist minister and you couldn't have a giant Farrah Fawcett poster, you could get one of those 8x11. So I had an 8x11 hanging on my wall in my bedroom, and my dad came in and said, "What the hell is that?" And I said, "That's Farrah Fawcett." And he ripped it off my wall, and I was so heartbroken. But you know, it was my dad's house, and we weren't going to have that kind of smut in our family, despite the fact that my older brother had a drawer full of Playboys in his underwear drawer, and my mom still never found those. So yeah, and obviously she was also in that magazine too at 1995. You want to talk about a million seller? She just knocked the boots off that particular month of Playboy. But I remember cutting out a newspaper black and white picture of the same poster, and it must have been 2 or 3 inches tall at most. And I had it. I was in a bunk bed. My brother was in the upper bunk. I was in the lower bunk, and I taped it to the top of my ceiling. So while I was listening to WSAI's Top 40 AM radio every night with my little white transistor radio, I was looking up at Farrah Fawcett and those pearly whites. Even in the black and white newspaper print, you could see those teeth. And I just thought that was just a wonderful thing. But I really remember from a sexual standpoint, my sexuality, and I think it probably held true for not only a bunch of 10, 12, 14-year-olds, but probably a bunch of 25 and 65-year-olds as well. They found some inner growth in them when they started seeing that poster of Farrah Fawcett. God rest her soul, 62 years of age when she died of anal cancer. But she's my first woman on my Mount Rushmore. Who do you have second?
Well, I'm going to go again on the I'm going to shift gears now, and I'm going to save my other personal choice for my last spot. But my number two is kind of an unusual selection. But since we've operated here in the sports vicinity, I have to say this is someone who I learned of her accomplishments a long time ago and have marveled at them. And being a sports historian and loving stories of achievement by people in general, even outside the sports realm. My second one is somebody that I very seriously doubt a lot of people are familiar with, but I would argue that on this month of recognizing females, she was the absolute greatest female athlete, maybe the greatest athlete period that our country certainly has ever produced. At birth, her name was Mildred Ella Didrikson. Now, I don't think a lot of people would get that. Maybe they know her better by her name later on in her career, Babe Zaharias.
Yep.
She was born in 1911 to a lower middle class family in Port Arthur, Texas, the fourth of five children. She was 5'7 and 115 in stature, but this person, Tony, could do anything. As a teenager, she won blue ribbons three consecutive years as a seamstress at the Texas State Fair, which I imagine is no small gathering. So she's already showed aptitude in that area, but her athletic skills were incredible. She could play musical instruments. She actually recorded a couple of albums. So this person had such range, it was amazing. But she ran as a track star in the 1932 LA Olympics and won two gold medals and a silver in her four events. She set two world records in hurdle races during those Olympics. And at 22 years old, she had her whole future ahead of her. But of course, by that time, she drifted away then from track and field and just started playing golf. And you know what happened then? Mm-hmm. She became the greatest female golfer still to this day of all time. She won 10 major championships. She won just a slew of tournaments in a time of formative years for golf, but just took up the game on her own in her mid-20s. In the meantime, her athletic prowess was so profound that she actually was invited, and of course it was a stunt, but spring training was a lot looser affair and a lot longer situation for Major League Baseball players back in those days. I think they went for like 2.5 months. They went to Florida in February, didn't start the season a lot of times till close to May. So mm-hmm. It was just endless. So Babe Zaharias several different times was invited because she had such aptitude as a pitcher. They actually let her pitch in spring training games to major league hitters, and she got a lot of them out.
Yep.
I mean, again, this is not some, you know, gigantic, freak of nature. Again, she was 5'7 and 115 pounds. She had also played some AAU basketball back in the day. This was just the most pure, amazing athlete ever born. She married George Zaharias, who was a former professional wrestler and a very accomplished amateur golfer. And they had a pretty good team for many years. There was a TV movie made in 1975 starring Susan Clark and Alex Karras, of all people, because the Harris was kind of a larger-than-life character, and that depicted it. But she really doesn't get much mention or acknowledgement, and that was as much of a reason for anything, because I've been aware of her for many, many years and all of her accomplishments. And as far as the ultimate tribute, the great sports writer Grantland Rice once saw her in a golf tournament and said, "This is an individual who has the most amazing ability, just natural talent, combined with the perfect physique from a muscular standpoint to do anything she wants to do. The most extraordinary athlete I've ever seen." This was Grantland Rice saying this, who was the preeminent sports writer in the early part of the 20th century. And he declared her not only the greatest female athlete, the greatest athlete of all time. So Babe Zaharias, welcome to the mountain.
And despite the fact that he was born about 16 years earlier, how cool would it have been to see Babe Ruth play with Babe Zaharias? Oh. We could have a woman Babe and a man Babe. That is fantastic.
And that's kind of where her name came from, Tony, yep. Because her mother, who was a Swedish immigrant, called her BB, mm-hmm. which and because Babe Ruth was so popular, it just kind of evolved into Babe. So that was a good tie-in, because that is where she got that name.
You're listening to the Kiefer and Curry Show here on Tony Curry Radio. Hear the show at least 5 days a week. Over 100,000 people have downloaded the app. And, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we're available on every major indice through Tony Curry Radio and the Kiefer and Curry Show. So the first two women that were the most influential women in my life just flew off just into my brain. And this first one here, it was certainly the second one right behind my mother. And I was 16 years old. My mom signed me up for Radio 101 at Lakota High School, which is now Lakota East and West. It got big. And I didn't want to do radio. I was like, "Why you put me in radio?" She goes, "You're going to go into radio. You're going to be huge. And then when you do, you're going to proclaim the glory of God. You're going to get out there and you're going to let everyone know just how wonderful God is." I said, "You got it, Mom." So I got into radio begrudgingly. And I met the teacher, Kay Taylor. And Kay Taylor was, By far the first woman in my life that believed in me. My mom believed in me. She built me up. I was a miracle baby. I wasn't supposed to be born. She took care of me, but Kay Taylor took care of me once I got through high school. And she was just an amazing woman. And, you know, our junior year, we would have a program director, music directors, and things like that. We couldn't run for radio station positions until our senior year. And I was running to be the music director of the radio station, quite frankly, because I was incredibly insecure and I just didn't feel like I could be anything better than that. And she said, "Why aren't you running for program director?" And I said, "Kay, I couldn't be a program director." She said, "Well, you should be a program director." And I said, "I don't know about that." So she goes, "Well, I'm putting you in for program director. You can run for whatever you want." And I said, "Okay." And knowing that I had a shot at music director because I was already filing records, I was always, you know, you had to listen to every single, we were a little 10-watt station at a WLHS at a Lakota High School, and we had to listen to every song in order to make sure there wasn't any profanity or anything because we couldn't play those types of things on a little non-for-profit LHS. And lo and behold, my senior year, I was a program director of WLHS. And that's when we still took meter readings and everything else. But she always believed in me, and so much so that even after I graduated and moved to Louisville, Kentucky, we kept in touch. She had some family down in Louisville, Kentucky, so when she came through, we'd grab dinner together. And to this day, as a matter of fact, this morning I texted her and I said, "Kay, I just want to let you know it's International Women's Month. And you made my final list of my top four." And she said, "I'm about ready to cry." And I said, "I just got to tell you, from a woman's standpoint, she was the first woman. She elected me into the Kiwanis Club. She did everything she could to support me. She saw something in me that I certainly didn't see. And without that, I wouldn't be doing the Kiefer and Curry Show right now. I'm just telling you, without Kay Moore, she got me my first commercial radio job. She made phone calls for me. She got me concert tickets for things. And she's just a wonderful woman. And I'll always remember just how prolific she was, not only in my career, but in my life. Kay Moore is, of course, or Kay Taylor, should I say. I get my two Ks confused because Kay Moore is another gal friend of mine. But Kay Taylor, by far, one of the most influential women in my life. All right, who's your third one?
Wow, that was just awesome. You almost made me cry there. let's move on. Again, I'm going to go to kind of a historic figure, but it's someone that I first noticed, and it didn't awaken anything in me except for admiration. But looking back and being a just huge fan of the Kennedy-Camelot era, Jacqueline Kennedy, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy-Onassis, was the first woman that really got my attention. Like so many other Americans, I was a child, of little tiny child at the time. But as I've gotten older and become really familiar with her story, another extraordinary person, and I think you can see the theme in kind of the people that I admire. I'm just in awe of people that have just a range of abilities. And this was a woman born into high social status, who went to George Washington University. She was fluent in not only English, of course, but Spanish, Italian, and French. She was a photographer and a journalist and a writer and later an editor, just a person of immense talent. But it was the charm and grace and beauty of Jackie Kennedy, who married John Kennedy, who at the time was probably the most prolific bachelor in the country, with the Kennedy money and all the fame. And after his older brother, Joe Kennedy, was killed in World War II in a plane explosion, John became kind of the heir to the throne, and his father, through his considerable fortune behind his political career, got him elected to the House and the Senate. And of course, in 1960, shocking the world at 43 years old, a Catholic elected president of the United States, all things that people said could never happen. Just a couple of years before that, as part of Joe Kennedy Sr.'s control of John Kennedy's career, he said, "You've got to find somebody to marry because you are not going to win the presidency as a single man." Yeah. Remember, we're talking about 1960 here. Uh-huh. Well, he did pretty well he had already met Jackie Kennedy in Washington. She was working for the Washington Examiner at the time, again, as a journalist and a photographer. And he kind of swept her off her feet. She was only 29 years old when they married. So when he was elected president, she was just 31 years old and the first lady of the United States. But you talk about taking a country by storm. She was so beautiful and so charming. Mm-hmm. Her style was distinct. She was the woman that everybody wanted to dress like, yeah. look like, her hairdo, her wardrobe, everything. And she had such grace. There's a documentary, and I know it's on YouTube, but she was so interested in American history and culture and wanted to do everything possible to preserve the White House that she thought was getting in a rundown condition and renovate and really make it the shrine and the people's place. And did a documentary on TV and was so flawless. She didn't really have, you know, acting training or media training. She was a newspaper person, but that documentary, if you get a chance, watch it, because it's so astounding how perfect she is, walking you around to the various rooms and telling you about the things she's done and wants to do. Just amazing. And I always, and I've talked about it on my show here on TKR Need to Know, obsession with the Kennedy assassination in 1963, all the details. I've read every book. I've pored over every detail. But think about her on that day. That day started in a Fort Worth hotel where the Kennedys had stayed overnight. John went down for a huge breakfast that morning with thousands of people in attendance. Jackie wasn't feeling well and said she wasn't going to come down. Well, Kennedy hadn't been there 10 minutes before he had somebody call up the room and says, "You've got to get dressed and get down here. They are all here to see you, not yeah. me." And she came down, Tony, in that famous, now infamous, beautiful pink Pierre Cardin dress suit with the pillbox pink hat. And when she walked in the room, I mean, the whole place just jaws dropped. I mean, mm-hmm. she was just mm-hmm. that kind of person. And her grace that day in the face of, think of that horror, sitting in that open limousine, you're inches away from lethal fire that is taking away the 46-year-old president of the United States. She was 34 years old at the time, but, you know, gathered herself, still thought it was important that she stand next to Lyndon Johnson as he took the oath of office on Air Force One, and was so gracious and so amazing throughout that whole terrible mourning period in America, remembering her husband and doing all the right things. So my image of women would not be at all complete if Jackie Kennedy wasn't part of this discussion, because I think she's one of the most extraordinary women that this country has ever produced.
An amazingly, incredibly strong woman, there's no doubt. These are our four women, our Mount Rushmore of women, if you will. We celebrate International Women's Month here. My third one, Julia Wells. Julia Wells was an Academy Award winner. She won Emmys. She won Golden Globes. She won 3 Grammys. She did not win a Tony, and she's not won a Tony yet, although when she's been nominated in the past, she turned it down. You may know her by a gal who's been in movies like My Fair Lady, Camelot, Mary Poppins, which, of course, she won her Academy Award. She's been in all 3 Shrek movies. It is Julie Andrews. Anyone who's listened to any time I've been on the radio here in Birmingham for over 35 years, I've got this thing for Julie Andrews. I absolutely love her. And the role that really set me over the top, of course, when she played opposite of Christopher Plummer in a wonderful movie called The Sound of Music. And ironically enough, he was interviewed towards the end of his life and was asked about what it was like to work with Julie Andrews. He goes, "I absolutely hated it." He goes, "Every time I did a scene with her, it was like being hit over the head with a Valentine's Day card." He said, "She was so damn happy, it would get on my nerves." He goes, "I couldn't handle it." But just an amazing woman. And then, you know, I talked about Farrah Fawcett. There was this flick called SOB a little bit later on in the 80s, where her husband, Blake Edwards, a man that she was married to for 41 years before he passed away, actually said, "You know what? I think it'd be a good idea for you to do nudity in this movie." And in the movie, she plays this Mary Poppins, this little flutter kind of person who's all super pure and clean. And next thing you know, she's pulling her top down, which is probably one of the most stilled pictures still on the internet of Julie Andrews in SOB. Just an amazing woman, born in England. The accent was wonderful. Unfortunately, there in the mid to late 90s, she had this horrible situation with her voice. They had a malpractice situation where they went in to fix her vocal cords and basically ruined her singing for life. She is one of only 2 people that can sing 4 different octaves. In her particular case, a soprano. Freddie Mercury is the other. The only 2 people that can hit 4 different octaves, that would be Julie Andrews. And again, maybe it was because of my youth, But the idea of a woman going into a monastery situation to become a nun and then falling in love with a man who owned a family of children, and just that kiss in that movie, The First Kiss, is like the best movie scene I can think of. It gives me goosebumps to think about it. You throw in the fact that that movie is more likely seen in and around the Christmas season, which is one of my favorite seasons of the year, and it's just a slam dunk. And you know, I'm telling you right now, Kip, I'm not a musical guy. I'm not going to see Hamilton. I'm not going to see Chicago, but I will watch The Sound of Music. I love everything about that movie from start to finish. I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful movie. And I love that movie ever since I was a teenager. But Julie Andrews would be the third lady as we celebrate International Women's Month here with our Mount Rushmore of women. You've got one more. Who you got?
Well, I got a comment on that real quick. I love that selection because now Julie Andrews has won a Tony. So,
yes,
because you just named her to your Tony Awards, which is really amazing stuff. I loved it later in her career too. Real quick, Tony, in the Dudley Moore movie 10, mm-hmm. she was his girlfriend and a star, you know, in the movie as playing basically herself, a famous singer and actress, but she was phenomenal in that movie. I mean, as great as she was as a young woman, in all of her classic movies, and I'm with you. We might lose our man card, but I love The Sound of Music. I love the story.
If you don't look at Julie Andrews in an attractive sexual kind of way, go rent the Burt Reynolds movie, The Man Who Loved Women. She plays a psychiatrist in that movie. There is a mirror that's placed on the floor as he lays on the couch, and that's all I'll say about Julie Andrews. If you've ever looked at it, Julie Andrews, you're like, come on, man, go watch that movie, and I'm telling you, it'll change everything for you.
All right, my fourth is Mike. Maybe going to be a surprise, but she was a slam dunk. She was the probably other than my mother the obvious choice here, and I don't think maybe a lot of people would go this route. But the circumstances of how life evolves sometimes leads to things happening you don't expect. But my ex-wife, mm-hmm. Kathy Blair, is my fourth person. Because, Tony, she made everything that has happened in my life possible. You know, you talk about your teacher believing in you. She actually, you know, bought my narrative and you know, embraced my vision. And she gave me the two greatest gifts I could ever possibly receive, my two sons. I can't tell you how extraordinary these guys are. I'm so proud of both of them. They're so talented and so accomplished. They have far, far exceeded anything I could have ever dreamed of being. And, you know, again, Kathy is the reason that they're here. We had a great situation. We were married for 14 years. I wish it was still going on, but sometimes life gets in the way. And we were both so committed to our sons, who we had our first son right away. So we really didn't have a lot of time to develop our own relationship. And really, both have talked about it now, frankly, we kind of neglected our own relationship for the benefit of our sons. But it was a sacrifice that was well worth it, because I just couldn't tell you how excited and thrilled I am that these guys, these extraordinary young men who are doing great things and will do so many more great things, are my sons, and she's the reason for that. The other reason that she qualifies and is just a no-brainer for this selection, she's just one of those people that every little event, everything we did, she was a person who could make anything, even the mundane routine things, special. And I am in position to say, and I know a lot of people don't have this experience with the pain of divorce, and it was very painful for a couple of years, but I love her. I will always love her, and I appreciate what she meant to my life and what she's given me.
I love that. I love that so much. Great pick. And maybe I'll feel that way about my ex in a couple of years. Yeah, I hope, I hope and pray I do. All right. Finally, my final woman, she was born Jane Ida Brucker Curry. She, of course, suffered from depression for nearly 50 years. And back in those days, there weren't depression pills and things like that. She also had Alzheimer's later on in her life. She was sexually abused as a child, but she ended that cycle in her own family, which I think makes her a hero of heroes for any particular family. And she did my laundry until I was 23 years old. I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and every weekend I met her at General Butler State Park up in Kentucky. She'd take my old clothes. She'd bring me my new clothes. My father would look at me and goes, "You got it so damn good with this mom of yours." And again, I was born about 14 years after my mom said she couldn't have any more children. I was the fourth. I was the baby. And I was a miracle baby. And she said, "I know you're a miracle. I know you're something special." And so she made sure that I just looked good and bathed me every single day and gave me all the love. And because of that, my bigger brothers used to beat me up after church every Sunday. She was an amazing woman. And I'll tell you a real quick story as we kind of hit the end here. My mom had Alzheimer's, and my father finally could not take care of her. She was walking the neighborhood, and so he put her in a home up the street, and he used to have a big party every summer for the entire family and the grandkids on his back deck. And he asked me, he said, "Should I invite your mother to it?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he goes, "Do you think once she gets here, she's not going to want to leave because I'm going to have to take her back to the home?" And I said, "No, I don't think she'll even realize what's going on." So I was with my son at the time. He was about 3 years old. And I explained to him, I said, "Grandma's not feeling well. She's sick. So she may not remember you. So just, you know, be respectful." And he's like, "That's cool." So we get up there. And so I see my mom and I give her a hug. And you can tell she's disheveled a little bit. She's not sure where she's at or who she's speaking with. And anyone that's been around Alzheimer's is amazing. They'll see you, they know who you are, and then 5 seconds later, they have no idea. And she came up to me and lowered her brow and pointed at my chest. She said, "I saved your life two times," and walked away. And I didn't know what she was talking about. And about 5 minutes later, she comes back up and she sticks her finger in my chest again. She goes, "I saved your life two times," and she walked away. And of course, at the time, my wife is there and she's like, "What is she talking about?" And I said, I don't know. About 10 minutes later, she walks back up to me and she puts her hand on my chest and she said, "I gave birth to you and you choked on a gobstopper when you were 16 and I gave you the Heimlich maneuver. I saved your life two times." And I was like, "What in the..." I said, "Yes, you did." I said, you're right. You gave me... I choked on a gobstopper. I was going to die at the age of 16. She gave me the Heimlich maneuver and went popping out, flying out the backyard. She did save my life. So she remembered those two things as my mother, but the most amazing mom. She was a stay-home mom back in that generation. That's what happened. My dad got out of school, went and picked up a newspaper route and delivered newspapers for 40 years with the Cincinnati Inquirer. My mom kept the house and just did a miraculous and wonderful job, and I will never be able to repay her everything she's ever done for me. I've heard your great stories about what you did with your mom and the stories of the last few weeks when she passed away. And I know how difficult that is, but our moms are certainly the biggest and best in the Mount Rushmores of my life. She is still missed and I just miss her. And, you know, as a son, you go back and think, could I have done things a little differently? Could I have shown more honor, more respect? And certainly we could have, but I think as fathers, that's what we do with our children. And I think we're doing the right thing. So fantastic show. Kip, man, this was great. This is wonderful. Incredibly therapeutic. It's something that I probably needed to talk about and something I needed to get through for International Women's Month. It worked out great. Fantastic show. The Kiefer and Curry Show. You can hear it at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. And wherever you get your podcast, it's the Kiefer and Curry Show. Check out Tony Curry Radio Podcast or TKR on podcast. We're available on every major industry. I'm letting you pick the subject next week. I can't wait to get after it again and do a show for you next week.
I can't wait either. This has been great. I like the word therapeutic. I'll say cathartic as well, because recognizing special people is what it's all about, because if they're not recognized, then they're not getting the recognition they deserve. And so I'm glad we were able to do that.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Okay, Tony.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.